As we are getting ready to go into the weekend, the Portland Trail Blazers did have their introductory press conference for Young Hansen today at the Trail Blazers practice facility. Joe Cronin, Chauncey Billups, Hansen, and his translator were on the dais taking questions, and it's the first time the local media has an opportunity to talk with Hansen. He did come through for his workout where he spoke with Chinese media outlets. There was, I want to say, about 10 people that came in there.
What was that? What was the contingency made up of today? How many new faces were in attendance? Because that's going to be the big thing, is the Chinese media goes all out
quite a bit. So there were, I believe, three or four different Chinese media outlets there. There's probably 12 to 15 people. Hansen's family, his parents were out there with some other folks as well. There were some people I could see that
were. How tall are they?
Mom, very tiny. Mom, very tiny. I didn't see dad. They said that their parents were there. I definitely saw mom. I didn't know who his dad was, so I didn't know who to look for, because there was a lot of people there that I didn't recognize.
But no,
so,
nobody very, very tall.
I didn't see any like 6'8" gentlemen that were walking around. So, and if I remember right, I believe Yao's parents are actually quite small.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just,
I have no idea.
Yeah, so,
but that is there are people that have that view of like, if your parents are big and you're big, you'll be proportional in health, like long term health won't be an issue. Whereas it can be a what gland is it, that
pituitary,
is that the one that the gigantism?
I believe so.
I don't know, but
that Marfan's, the most guys that
unproportionate
are,
growth then leads to more injury.
And a lot of guys in the NBA, 6'10 or taller, have Marfans, but like Isaac Austin, Baylor kid, got withheld from the NBA because he had Marfans that was more advanced, and that can lead to cardiac issues. And so he was not granted a waiver to play in the NBA because they did not want to have somebody die on the court.
That's crazy, man. Like, and I don't know what the actual statistics are on that or what science is actually saying on it, but you've seen that floated out there, that like that is a concern, is like, all right, well, if your parents are both big, like if you look at Cooper Flagg's parents, right, and he's not 7 feet tall, but you look at Cooper Flagg's parents and you go, both of them are very large human beings. Shockingly, they made a very large human being.
Con Knipple, both his parents, both played collegiate basketball. Donovan, His parents, collegiate basketball, like it kind of lends itself to that in a sense.
To being proportionate, growing in your body, being naturally able to withstand that frame.
Yeah, and that's where you get the proportionality. And this is my first time outside of the workout where I got to see him for a split second, just kind of watching Hansen move around, because, you know, he's moving around, shaking a lot of hands, doing the politician thing.
He seems like a really nice person.
So you had Joe, Chauncey, Hansen, and his translator up on the dais, but the entire Blazers front office was there. Andre Patterson, Sergey Oliva, Mike Schmitz, Jake Wolf, who is, I was asked to make sure to shout him out. He was the scout who identified Hansen 2 years ago. I was told he doesn't like the limelight, but we want to make sure we give him his love. It was funny. He was standing in between Mike and Sergey, and Hansen came over and gave him a big hug and a laugh, and like, you know, that he's here because that scout identified him, like, hey, we should really be watching this kid.
Yeah.
But he went through and shook everyone's hand. And it was probably 40 people. As far as like the entire front office and all the support staff, video people, scouts, everything. And some people aren't good at that stuff. He just seems to have a general way about him, a professionalism to him and a genuineness to him. It's not a big deal, but it's like, it's another mark that you kind of put on the box of like, okay, this guy gets it.
Yep.
Like, again, contrasting it to Ace Bailey, it has nothing to do with him as a person, but like, because the reports, and I've talked to Ace. Ace is a very nice, joking, jovial kid, but it's the maturity, and not maturity in like he's a terrible person. He's just like a 12-year-old. He's just a kid. And with Hansen, I think a big part of that is playing for the Chinese national team. And
being professional for 2 years.
And being in China, where when like the Chinese national team, like when they came to Summer League, like they aren't staying at the Wynn and whining and dying. It's a please do not take this the wrong way. I mean this in a compliment. It is militaristic.
People taking it the wrong way?
Yeah, I know.
In 3, 2, 1.
But it is run very militaristic. Casey Holdall shared a video of, like, I think I saw Hansen last year. And it was a video of in his car of the Chinese national team running through Las Vegas in the rain. They weren't traveling first class around places. Like, they were walking to and from facilities in the rain.
They walk like real people do.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like... There's a certain thing that comes with it of, like, being earned. It is not the pampered AAU circuit of, you know, having the catered meals and jerseys and shoes. Like, no, you work for this. You earn this. And there's a professionalism that comes with Hansen.
Well, and also the academies that they have in Asia and in Europe as mm-hmm. well. When you get identified, you start that at a very young age. And for him, you know, he even was talking about it today. He was like, 13, 14, 15 years old when they identified him and placed him in those academies where you're training for that.
Yep. He said when he was 15 years old, again, through his translator, said when he was 15 years old, he was asked, you know, when playing professional basketball became a reality to him. He said, when I was 15 years old, the Chinese national team pulled me aside and said, you have the potential to play in the CBA. And that's when it became real for him. And that's when he started to lock in on how to be a pro. So he's been working on being a pro for 5 years. That's something that feeds into this. The, you know, the workout regimen, you know, the dedication, all of the things that come along with that. And not only on the court, but off the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, you know, he had the quote that went viral. I like to eat, sleep, PS5, all those kind of things. But you even see it of him trying to speak English. Like, he does not speak English outside of basketball. He is trying to learn the culture so that he can communicate. And, like, there are, you know, we were talking before the show with the young Jake out there in Major League Baseball. There are Major League Baseball players that just will not operate in English ever.
Is famously a guy who could speak English in the clubhouse, but immediately when the cameras came on, he was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't want to screw this up.
No, and he spoke about that. He said, no, I just want to make sure that I am fully understood and there might be some intricacies mm-hmm. of the language. Although his interview with Bob Costas, where he says his favorite American phrase is, it's hotter than a wool sock. Like, it's a lot of swear words mm-hmm. and it's really funny. Hotter than a Kansas City day, like in a rat's bleep on a wool sock. Like, he knows English. And it's nice to see Jan kind of taking the same approach.
My favorite Ichiro quote is, who the F is Tom Brady?
Thank you.
Don't know that reference, Google it. Just Google Ichiro, who the F is Tom Brady.
It's
an all-time story.
It's fantastic. It's one of those, it will make you smile if you've never heard it before.
He was also very famous for giving a pumped-up locker room speech at the All-Star game every year for the American League. He would just go off and they'd say swear words and just screaming from Ichiro. It's legendary, and nobody outside of, like, the inner circle of MLB has ever seen it.
And imagine being a rookie on those teams where when Griffey came back, and Ichiro and Griffey would, like, wrestle. Imagine being a rookie, just being in that locker room, being like, these are two of the best baseball players of all time. And they would just start wrestling in the locker room, in the clubhouse. That'd be wild.
That mean, it would be not a bucket list, but, like, pretty damn cool. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of thing that it's what makes sports cool. We went through in hour number one some of the quotes coming out. I was at the practice facility, and one of the questions that he was asked was, and this is from Chinese media, so I didn't get to hear the entirety of the question. I could just kind of pick little parts of it out. But he was generally asked about the comparisons to Yao, because of obviously Chinese descent and their greatest player, mm-hmm. but also Baby Jokic. He, through a translator, said, it's a big honor to be compared to Baby Joker or Yao, but I'm just trying to be better each day. And it's the right, like, acknowledge that you have that comparison, and that's what people are going with, but also just be like, hey, man, those are special. He was asked further along, again, by Chinese media about being a face for China. And I thought it was really cool. He said a version of, you know, I know that where I kind of am in this. And we talked about this with yesterday about being the face for 1 billion people in China, because if he's successful, it's exactly what he will be.
Yep.
And he's, I want to be successful in my career. I want to do this for me, but I want to go back to China and the NBA China and the expansion and be an ambassador for China and in my country and really pour back into my country. And I thought that was really cool. Like, this is a guy who turned 20 yesterday, who again shows some maturity. Even if this is all kind of placating and all those kind of things, he's ticking the boxes of saying the right things.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously being trained to speak that in that kind of parlance when you're mm-hmm. over in China as well, like everything, we're going to do it for everybody else. Then that's kind of the way that he's been raised is mm-hmm. To speak that way and to have that kind of courtesy at the podium.
Yep. He was asked about his draft position, you know, being up in the stands. Where, you know, what did he think was going to happen on draft day? And, you know, were you surprised by going 16? Again, through his translator, he said that I thought I was going to go after pick 20. When Adam, he didn't say Silver, he just said Adam. I thought that was kind of funny. He says, when Adam called my name at 16, I was excited. So if he thinks he's going after 20, Brooklyn is right there at 22. It makes me wonder either he had some information
yep.
that he was had a team that was in that range that was going to be looking at him mm-hmm. and why the Blazers took him at 16. Again, this is you just kind of have to go with your gut on this. Of could the Blazers have traded back to 23 with the Pelicans and put the Nets in front of them twice and still got him? I don't know, but what he said was, I thought I was going after 20, and that would put you right there.
Lakers trying to trade in the first round. They needed a big.
Yeah, they do.
He's a clutch client.
So, From what you've heard from the press conference, what's your general takeaway of Hansen so far?
I think Hansen seems like a good young man with his head on his shoulders. Like, he seems like a regular kind of kid. Like, he hasn't been propped up on the pedestal. And I think you said it best in that he wasn't living the AAU culture mm-hmm. his whole life. But the bigger takeaway were like the things that Chauncey Billups said, because I think that was pretty telling in that. And I said this yesterday, and this is the thing, anybody that has a reaction one way or the other, you just don't know. We have no idea.
No.
What any of these guys, including Cooper Flagg, are going to be in the NBA. And that to me is one of the biggest things, is that does he have a lot of holes? Yeah, he does. He has a lot of question marks. Anytime you take somebody that's 7'1", right? You have these questions of mobility, physicality. He can flash all of the touch. How many times have we been like, the surefire, that guy's going to be great in the NBA? Who's an American that we've seen for several years? It happens all the time where we think these guys are going to be great and they're not. We also think, hey, look at this guy. Comes in and all of a sudden he's the favorite player in the market. Tumani Kamara, for God's sakes. Right?
Yeah, Tua was not a guy when the trade was made anybody gave a damn about.
He was a second round pick.
Yeah.
Like
52nd.
We just don't know. We have no earthly idea what these guys are going to turn into. And the approach that you have seen both Joe Cronin and Chauncey Billups have with Young Hansen is that they don't know either.
Mm-mm.
And they're not going to say things like, he could be a generational talent at his position, like they did with Scoot Henderson. They're not going to overinflate guys anymore. And because they don't know, and they could be as confident as all get out.
They could internally think he is Chinese Jokic.
And by the way, when everybody looks at him as a mid-second round guy, they do think that when you draft him at 16,
mm-hmm.
that he is going to be that guy. But they're not putting that on him.
No.
And so we don't know. Nobody knows what's going on here. Do we have our questions? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
we do, and that's fine.
And I think that's where a lot of this comes from, is the uncertainty.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. Had they picked him at 11, there's certainly much, as a back-end lottery prospect, there's certainly more pressure.
Yep.
I think the Blazers did a very good job. I don't know about the pick, but I know that if that guy was going to be your pick, and you managed to trade back out of your spot, knowing full well that the guy that you were going to go after was certainly going to be there at 16, that you got an unprotected first round pick to do something you were going to do already, I think that's very good business.
And now you have three first round picks that
in 2020,
in 2028, that by then you'll know what you got in Young Hansen. And so you can go, all right, let's try to rectify this and we'll try to package these together and make good on it.
And not just that, 2028 is when their books start getting tighter again. If Scoot hits, if Tumani gets his deal, if Shaden hits, if Donovan is up for his new deal. And now you've got draft capital in a space where if guys hit or they don't and you have to move things around,
yeah,
you have potential capital to do something. The thing about this, though, is that, and this is, again, this is not me excusing the Blazers or justifying the pick. For Hansen to, like, the bar that he has to clear, for me, there's two bars. Cedric Coward cannot be Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that is going to bite you. That it, because that's the guy that took your spot at 11 that Memphis moved up to get. If he turns into a star, that's going to hurt. If Carter Bryant turns into a star, that's going to hurt. But if those guys are just good players, Carter and Coward, if Hansen is just a rotation level big at pick 16, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
Just go look at the history of the NBA draft and look at pick 16. There's some good players there. There's some good rotation players there. And there's guys that did not pan out at all.
You just better hope there's not a shooter in there, because that's the thing that this team desperately needs. And they don't have one.
Regardless, even if they added Carter or Coward, they're still going to need shooting.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. But if one of those guys turns into a dyed-in-the-wool, holy crap shooter, yeah, that ends up becoming a problem. All right, coming up next, Florida State is going to Florida State, because that's all Florida State knows how to do. We'll get to that next year on Danny and Dusty, 10 of the Fan. All right, we're up against it because I'm an idiot and I don't watch the clock. A little bit of, well, not minor, but because pretty important news in the NBA. Masai Ujiri, longtime general manager, president of the Raptors, has been relieved of duties following the NBA draft last night.
Oh, no way. Get him through the draft, then fire him.
Yeah, the old, well, it's not the old Kevin Pritchard, because Pritchard was fired, then did the draft.
Mm-hmm. Which they said, I will fire you, and then I will sit across the table and watch you draft Luke Babbitt and Armon Johnson.
Yeah.
And oops, like it.
I don't know if you like
that
it.
That was weird. And that's why it's like, when do you do this? There's no real great time. Remember, right at the end of the regular season, there was a rumbling that he could be on the outs in Toronto, mm-hmm. and then they just went through the entire draft process, and it was like, but if that's the thing, do it then.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was neutered in the draft process and wasn't able to have his input and his presence wasn't felt like in years past, mm-hmm. then just let him go and roll with an interim in during that draft.
So you can draft a guy and call him Maury Boyles who doesn't want to be there.
And goes, oh.
Bleep.
F. Well, maybe, like, and that could explain potentially why that was the reaction from him. Is like, you go through that process, the extensive interviews that you go through, and you get that intel that, like, Masai Ujiri is not going to be a guy who's going to be there for very long. You're going, uh-oh, this doesn't feel good.
There's been pressure on Masai here for quite some time, as they are the same group that owned the Toronto Maple Leafs. And after they got their title in 2019, Masai probably got a little too high on his own supply. And they lost Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby for pennies on the dollar because he thought he was Danny Ainge and he was going to take blood from a stone.
Oh, no way. We've never been through overvaluing a product mm-hmm. until you don't get much of
anything
return
out of it at all. That led to where they kind of are now, where Kendrick Perkins says they're the sixth best team in the NBA and everybody else is pointing, or in the Eastern Conference, and everybody's pointing and laughing like, no, they're not. RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, Scotty Barnes, CMB, and Jakob Poeltl is not the murderer's row of roster content, as it were.
And that is the complaint that many have over ESPN's NBA coverage.
Ta-da! All right, coming up next, Florida State is going to Florida State because that's all Florida State knows how to do. And this is just the, like, if you've been following along in the ACC saga and everything else that has come out with that, nothing here is remotely surprising. We'll get to that more, but first, here's Schultzy with the Sports Center update. Florida State is just a perfect representation of Florida man in general.
Mm-hmm.
They will find a way to be fun, entertaining, and absolutely crazy and erratic and complete dumpster fire at basically every turn. And as it pertains to the world of college football, revenue sharing, contracts, and everything else of the sort, they seem to not be at the center of it, but pretty damn close.
It's, they are, in, they, this is the epitome of too many cooks in the kitchen. is what is happening at Florida State, whether it is who their football coach is, going from Jimbo Fisher to Mike Norvell, to the wanting to get out of the ACC, to having their NIL be a complete and utter disaster the first 3 years of NIL, to now with revenue sharing, when we say approaching July 1, revenue sharing in college sports happens, where that the House settlement comes into effect. And now CBS Sports has an article up where they spoke to several agents, general managers, football support staffers, administrators across all conferences, and ask them about and ask them what's been going on at Florida State, because some of the stuff that is being put into these Florida State revenue share contracts, it isn't just eye popping on the surface. People within college athletics are saying this stuff is wild and nobody else is doing this. They're putting in clauses in their revenue share contracts that say, if you get injured or you have an illness that affects your name, image, and likeness, then we can revoke your money. Think about that.
Boy.
A football player, they pay a guy and he's not living up to it, but they enter that contract. He rolls his ankle and it's just an ankle sprain. It's not like a torn ACL. They can get out of that deal.
Selfishly, I'll make this about me. It would be when I started my contract here, and 6 months later, I have a hip surgery that keeps me off air for a month, and then and our boss is being like, "You're gone."
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a world you want to live in if you've signed a contract for multiple years.
It's what they're doing is not. Here's a GM from a Big 12 team. I do understand they have all the leverage, but F.
It's just because you have all the leverage doesn't mean you want to use the crowbar on the plastic bag.
Well, they also have, and all schools are doing this to some degree, and we do have audio to give you kind of a frame of reference here. Two Syracuse players went on a podcast called The Pride of Orange, okay, or State of Orange, Demetrius Samuel and Byron Washington. This is them talking about what their fine scale is at Syracuse.
People here, all right, in college, they're like, oh, these kids get all this money. They don't know how to act with it. But for everybody keeping y'all alive, so tell the people, if you do what, you get docked.
We get fined for it. You miss more than 2 hours in class, you got class checkers. If you don't have your jug or your tablet for like a family,
that's $50.
$50.
Yeah, every time a coach see you without it, though.
You don't make weight. You gotta lose two pounds or gain two pounds.
Oh, this is a lead.
Yeah, but you weigh in three times. So like on Monday, it's kind of like more lenient.
Yeah.
Wednesday, you kind of want to be there. And then on Friday, if you're not there.
Yeah, Friday, if you ain't
quarter.
There. You,
a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter.
Your monthly check.
Yeah.
You see people trying to starve on Thursday. Yeah. People trying to eat Thursday night.
That's crazy.
Because you know that quarter coming if you don't make it.
It's crazy too, cause like, that's for the week, and then like, if you go to the next week and you start over, that's another quarter from your check. So like, you can really
lose your whole check.
So you could lose your whole check if you miss weight the entire month, right? The extremes that Florida State is going to is that their fine scale is basically they can have unilateral decision making on anything being a fine. If you lose a piece of equipment, team issue, so you lose a pair of team issue shorts or a pair of cleats or your mouthpiece, they can fine you $2,500 for that.
Yeah. Okay.
They can fine you $1,000 for missing a class. Okay.
You know what? The equipment one, I'm a little, that's whatever. The class one, I kind of like.
Yeah. No, it's great.
I kind of like that one.
It's great. Because, guys, that's going to get you to have your
class. Because all of a sudden, if there's real impact, yeah, you're gonna find a way to make sure you get the class in the morning.
They have their substance abuse fines, which is, this is in every single school have this. Mm-hmm. And look, this is the thing with what Florida State is doing is that every university has some sort of clause like this, but they are saying they are the most egregious in the scaling of their fines. So steroids, marijuana, any other substance, $1,000 for the first fine. Okay. The second one is 10% of your total compensation. Oof. The third offense is 50% of your total compensation, and the coach can just kick you off the team at any time. That one isn't the worst.
No, I mean, because you want to monitor guys' health. Like, I get that.
But here is where they are vastly different than anybody else. Apparently, they have a rollover clause in all of it, where schools are doing this to where the standard practice right now, and this is, by the way, brand new, so everybody's trying to figure this out on their own, is the standard practice is a negotiating window will open up. And within that negotiating window, you can go for more money. The school can say, hey, we're going to give you less money, which means go enter the portal. What Florida State has is an automatic rollover of everything for you. So if you have to formally submit that you want to reopen negotiations, and if you do not, it is automatically going to roll over for you. That's where the agents are going, that ain't that, right.
That's not, yeah.
It's a year to year. Every one of them, by the way, is a year to year deal, where some schools are saying, hey, we'll do a 2-year deal with you.
The multi-year deal, so you can lock some things in. I wonder if Georgia has anything around driving.
Boy, they sure should.
That feels like you should probably have that one.
I think
there.
Traffic violation should be one. But this should not be a surprise to anybody that what's happening here, that if you, Syracuse, it's a $50 fine for losing something or not having something on you.
Mm-hmm.
$2,500 at Florida State.
That's a bit of, you're talking about the sliders there.
Boy. And look, what they are trying to do is have the ability to run guys off if they can. The two big ones are their fine scaling and just how high it is. And then also the fact that they can just take all of the money away from you if you get injured is crazy.
That's insane. You have to have those protections in there. That's why we have guaranteed contracts in professional sports.
Especially from a university where Jordan Travis got hurt and they got screwed because of an injury in the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, you mentioned
that same school is going to be like, no.
You mentioned those contracts in professional sports, Danny. That's all from collective bargaining agreements, mm-hmm. right? So you wonder, are college athletes, at least the football players, are we going to see like a strike in mass of like 2,000 kids or something like that?
Well, no, you're not going to see that necessarily yet. What you're going to see is, and I don't know if Florida State really understands this aspect of it, it's going to be weaponized in recruiting.
Yeah, 100%.
You are not going to be able to recruit the at a high level when, you know, Georgia, Oregon, USC, Notre Dame, Ohio State are sitting there and they're going, well, do you know what Florida State can do?
Hell, just think in your own backyard with Miami and Florida. What those schools are going to say.
If you roll your ankle, that money can go. Like, you need to make sure you understand the contract that you're entering and – like that won't be something that, and again, this is where the third parties get involved, mm-hmm. right? That's not going to be something that the good recruiting schools, their coaches aren't going to be saying that.
No, your NIL lawyers are going to be doing that.
It will be the collectives that still will exist going, hey, by the way, we saw that your client, because you're going to go through the agent, your client is going to a Florida State. Do they know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what you're getting into?
And do agents start steering guys away because of that?
They already are. They already are.
So
that is going to be, we are going to see lenience in this towards the athletes to avoid exactly what Jordan was saying. Because if too many schools start doing this, and this is the thing, schools are going to note what the other ones are doing and saying, can we use something to our advantage?
Mm-hmm.
So Coach Lanning going into a meeting now, hey, our fine for this, $50. Florida State's fine for this, $2,500. We want you here. Do you need to say more than that?
I don't. Well, I don't think he would, because he doesn't. Okay. Like, he is very vocal that he doesn't recruit against schools. He recruits for his.
Mm.
But that's where the third parties get involved in that. Yeah. Somebody will, though. What you just said, somebody's going to say it.
That way, make sure that that message is carried, as it were. All right, something that will eat up far too much of my time, and I'm sure it's eaten up a lot of your times. EA Sports College Football 25 is getting close to coming out, and we got at least the team ratings, and where do a couple of local schools, or a local school, fall in that top 25? We'll get to that to round up today's show here on Danny and Dusty, 10th Fan. One of my summer rites of passage returned last year with EA Sports College Football.
Hey-o!
And I love the living crap out of that game. It's so much fun. It is the game that I probably play the most during the summer. And we have at least some initial ratings coming out already as it pertains to the team ratings. Chris Vanini has the top 25 overall, with the Alabama Crimson Tide leading the list. They're the only team with an 89 overall, with Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Clemson, and Texas A&M, all 88 overalls. And at number 9, the Oregon Ducks at 86.
Yeah, I think when you look at the top 10 and really the top 25 as a whole, not surprising to many. A lot of Big Ten and SEC in there. Just looking at that top 10, you have two that reside outside of those two conferences in Notre Dame and Clemson at fifth and seventh, respectively. I've been trying to tell you, like, Clemson's going to be really good this year, and because their defense is going to be lights out. Their quarterback is one of the better returning quarterbacks in the entire country. They're going to be good. But number one being Alabama, Kalen DeBoer has done a really damn good job there.
Yeah, they've got dudes everywhere.
Yes, they still are recruiting at a ridiculously high level. They do have a very tough schedule this year, and they may be a very talented team. And this isn't like last year where it was head and shoulders. Everybody looked at Ohio State's roster before the season and went, oh my God, that is definitively the best roster in the country. We don't have that this year, but we have a ton of really damn good teams.
Yeah, and when you take a look at it, there's breakouts between offense and defense. The number one offenses in the country: Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, and Arizona State.
Yeah, Sam Levitt is one of the best returning quarterbacks in the country. Outside of Cam Scataboo, they basically return everybody on that offense. And then you have one of the best play callers in college football in Kenny Dillingham. That makes complete sense. And look, Sam Levitt is going to take another massive step forward this year.
I believe he's third in Heisman favorite right now.
He is going to be special this year at Arizona State. And another year with Kenny Dillingham to continue to unlock the offense. The Sun Devils are going to be good. Scataboo meant so much to them because he got a lot of extra yards for them. But then you have their entire offensive line coming back. Your quarterback is back. They have a lot of maturity on that team.
As pertains to the Oregon Ducks, they are tied with Ole Miss, USC, Boise State, Iowa State, Nebraska, and South Carolina with an 85 overall offense. But on the defensive side of the ball, number one, Alabama at a 96. The only other two teams with a 94, Texas and Penn State, but at a 92 overall, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, LSU, and Texas Tech.
Texas Tech has a war chest of money that they used on NIL, and they are going to be a defensive force. It's weird to say because of what we know of Texas Tech, because we've been brainwormed by Mike Leach just always being there, and then Cliff Kingsbury always being there. Joey McGuire's team is built on defense this year. They are going to be good at every single level on that defensive side of the ball.
And in case you're wondering, Arizona State overall, number 14.
Yeah.
Because they had a defense that came in 23rd. At 23rd.
Yeah.
So right there, right at the edge of the top 10 or the top five in offense and a top 20 defense.
And Oregon's defense comes in at seventh. And
well, they're tied for third. Yeah.
Yeah. They take in these ratings, the positional groups, they
break them out. Yeah.
They're broken out. Oregon going to be really good on defense. Their offensive rating, obviously the unknown of what Dante Moore looks like at quarterback. Mekhi Hughes, Isaiah World, they will be two of the top-rated players at their positions at tackle and running back. Kenyon Sadiq will be one of the best tight ends in the game. Their receiving core is going to be pretty damn good with DeCorian Moore and company on the outside. I wonder what's going to happen. Evan Stewart with an off-season injury. Will you be able to play with Evan Stewart?
Turn injuries off.
Just turn him on. Have him on there. I'm ready for college football to be back. And look, we're less than a month away from Big Ten Media Days.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that's crazy. Oh boy, oh boy.
It's a very cold month. In case you're wondering, real quick, we do have summer league schedule for the NBA. It is out.
Yeah. 7-11, they play Golden State. Mm-hmm. And then they have Memphis on the 12th. The 15th, they play New Orleans. And then the 17th, they play Houston.
So getting a lot of marquee matchups. You do get Memphis.
You get Cedric Coward versus Yang Hansen. Yep. Like, you get it, baby. Casey Holdall reporting the first two games are going to be on ESPN2. The third game against New Orleans will be on ESPN. The fourth is on NBA TV.
There you go.
Boom.
Love to see it.
All right. That'll do it for us. Everybody have a great weekend. We will be back Monday from noon to 3. Coming up next, you got 4 hours of power from there. Mouths to your ears. It's an SOB edition of Primetime with Suk, Ortner, and Buckley on the Fan.
Bye.